You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. 2020 is shaping up to be a pretty good year for stargazers. Coming up, we'll talk about all the cool stuff you can see and when. Now, if you live in Douglas and Washburn counties, there's a free drive-through COVID-19 testing event going on in your area today. It's part of a series of testing events in northwestern Wisconsin scheduled during the first 2 weeks of the month. These are areas where the local health systems aren't set up to do the amount of testing needed to help contain the outbreak. Alana Watson has been covering the testing events for WPR. She's our 2019 Second Century News Fellow. Alana, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's talk first about access. What exactly do these counties say they needed here?
So basically, the governor asked a lot of the counties, you know, if they would like to see an increase in testing or if they needed an increase in testing. And so a lot of the counties in the northwestern part of the state said, yes, absolutely, along with tribes, I would also like to mention. They said, yes, absolutely, because they haven't been able to get the amount of testing that some counties have had in recent weeks.
And the National Guard, the Wisconsin National Guard, is part of the story here. What's their role?
Absolutely. So the National Guard, they are actually helping to administer tests. So a lot of the local health departments, they don't have the capacity to actually test as many people as they're wanting to. So the governor had a few National Guard members go out and help administer these COVID-19 tests. And I spoke with the National Guard spokesperson, Captain Joe Travato, and he said that nearly 400 citizen soldiers are going to be helping administer tests in the northwest counties in Wisconsin.
And these National Guard troops have their own protective equipment in many cases, it sounds like.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. They do have gas masks that they are using. They're military issued. And they also have suits that they are going to be using as well. And the cool thing about this is that this is equipment that they've already had. So they're not depleting any civilian stockpiles of personal protective equipment or PPE. And they're also serving our community. So it's great.
And how many tests, in terms of capacity, how many tests does the Wisconsin National Guard think they could administer and then get processed in, say, a single day's event?
So from what I've heard from a few county administrators is that they should be able to administer at least 300 tests in a day, roughly 70 tests per hour, which, I mean, it's a lot. And I know that based on what Captain Travato said, is that they should be getting results within 24 to 48 hours. And then whoever tests positive, they will be notified.
And you talked to some county officials there. What kind of things did they have to say?
Yes, absolutely. I actually got to speak with Ashland County Administrator Clark Schroeder, and I will let you play a bite that I have from him.
This basically will allow people who probably are more curious about their symptoms, do I have this? And I think it'll help them be more aware of how to protect themselves and how to protect others around them.
So that leads to the question, Alana, who is eligible for these tests?
So any Wisconsin resident is eligible for the test, from my understanding. What Clark basically let me know is that as long as they are a Wisconsin resident, they are able to get tested. The testing is free. Now, I am unaware of any restrictions in terms of where they live in terms of county, but from my understanding, any Wisconsin resident who is 5 years or 5 years old or older, and has a symptom, possible symptom of COVID-19, including cough, sore throat, the shortness of breath, fatigue, fever, headache, all of those symptoms that we know of that are symptoms of COVID-19, anyone can get tested.
Talking to WPR's Alana Watson about COVID-19 testing in northwestern Wisconsin with the National Guard on board to provide the personnel to do these tests. All right, now paint us a picture. How are they organizing these tests? What is it going to look like when people pull up?
So it's all drive-through testing. So no one's going to have to get out of their car to go into a building. People basically pull up, they'll fill out a little bit of information, and then they'll get their test. Once they have their test, they'll probably be able to get a little bit of background information on when and how they'll be contacted if they are positive or if they test negative, and then they can go about their day. Obviously, people would probably want to take a few precautions just until they get their test results back, but ultimately, it's going to get the test, driving through, get it, and then you're done.
And as I mentioned, there's a couple counties that have been doing this today, Douglas and Washburn, I think it was. Is this something that's going to then rotate from community to community?
Yes, exactly. It started off in Buffalo and Pippin County on the 1st, and it will pretty much go throughout this entire week and into next week. And I believe the last counties are Chippewa and Rusk, I believe. And they will have testing on May 14th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
And from the timeline you mentioned, they were trying to get back to people within a day or two. Do we have we seen numbers from the earliest rounds of testing in this program?
As of right now, no. I am in contact with Buffalo County and Pippin County. They said they were going to get results back to me as soon as they can. Of course, it has been past 24 to 48 hours, but my assumption is that they probably had a lot of testing that was done. They possibly could have had all 300 tests administered that day. So it's probably going to take some time to get everything lined up so they can actually report out the testing results.
Alana, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
That's Alana Watson, WPR's 2019 Second Century News Fellow, telling us about testing going on for COVID-19 in northwestern Wisconsin with the help of the National Guard. Coming up, the COVID-19 pandemic and stay-at-home orders are in many ways uncharted waters for us here in the U.S. So a Middleton woman and her 10-year-old daughter are documenting it with a newspaper just for kids. They join us coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll meet a mother-daughter team from Wisconsin who have launched a kid-focused newspaper documenting life during the coronavirus pandemic. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Carl Christensen with a story about meeting our neighbors.
Moving to a new community can spark a host of challenges. Marisol Gonzalez of Madison shares a story about trying to win over her new neighbors with food and kindness.
6 years ago, I was moving to a very white neighborhood. And when we moved to that neighborhood, my husband told me that one of the neighbors told him she will be watching us. And if she noticed anything wrong with us, she will call the police right away. In that moment, I gotta say that I like people to like me, and I'm very friendly. So when my husband told me that, it just triggered my obsession for this neighbor to like me. So I decided to do what Mexicans does, which is a party. I bake a lot of cookies, and I make fancy invitations, and I went to the whole block to invite all of these neighbors. Some of them, they don't even open the door, but I left the cookies in the mailbox. And so by the time of the party came, I cleaned the house. I asked my children to be dressed nicely. And for a Mexican also, this is a big deal. I had everything ready 20 minutes before the party started. By the time for the party started, I was starting to get very, very nervous because I made a lot of food. I made tostadas, guacamole, I had tamales, I had empanadas, hot chocolate, beer, horchata. By the time for the party started, nobody was there. And by that time, I already knew white people a little bit. So I knew that they usually come 5 minutes before the party started. So I was very nervous because nobody was knocking my door. And I was thinking a lot of thoughts like, what if they really, really don't like us? What if they don't gonna give us a chance? And all of a sudden, 5 minutes after the party started, somebody knocked at the door. And it was two old ladies who brought us like plants and welcoming cards. They stay only for about 15 minutes, grab an empanada, and take home a cup of hot chocolate. And you will think I was disappointed, but as I say, I'm a very friendly person. That was the best day in the new neighborhood for me. I decided to continue doing more parties because that works for two neighbors. So I keep persisting doing that. And any single chance I had to make a party, to meet more neighbors, I will do it. All of a sudden, all of these neighbors start to come to my parties. And then they start to making their own parties. Last October, we had to move out of the neighborhood. What happened is the neighbors put a party together for us. Even some of them cry and ask us, why are you guys leaving? Don't leave us. The bond that we made in that white neighborhood with only one family of color was very amazing. And the most important thing that happened is the everybody like me.
Marisol Gonzalez's story came to us from the podcast Inside Stories, which features Madison storytellers and digs deeper into their lives. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Carl Christensen.
Now, Wisconsin's safer at home order has been hard on everybody just about, including kids. Since schools are closed, they're having to do all their school stuff at home without physically hanging out with their friends. And forget about the big birthday parties, sleepovers, or family vacations, but they're making the best of it, and some of them are writing, check that, reporting about life under quarantine. Laura Lundgren is a former English teacher and Middleton resident. She's the editor-in-chief of the Quarantine Times, a new kid-centered newspaper she launched last month. Laura, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Also with us, Laura's 10-year-old daughter, Claire, who is the assistant editor of the Quarantine Times. Claire, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Laura, tell us how the Quarantine Times got started.
Yeah, I was watching everything get canceled, as we all were, in the middle of March, and realizing kids especially were just not going to have anything to look forward to. No spring break trips, no sports. And I thought, man, what are kids going to do during this time? And woke up one morning and said, I've got an idea. I'm going to start a newspaper, give kids a place to process what they're living through and write their own version of this history and make it a way to connect with neighbors and make our community feel connected when we're actually very isolated.
And Claire, what kind of things do you do for the newspaper?
I write and draw and take pictures.
What's been your favorite assignment so far, Claire, for the paper?
Probably the writing a thank you note to things that have been keeping company during quarantine, like Alexas or TV or video games.
Yep.
Laura, could you talk about some of the other things that you've featured in the paper?
Yeah, one of the first things we did was we had kids imagine what the quarantine felt like from their pet's perspective. What is their dog or cat thinking now that they're all at home all the time? And so kids wrote from their pet's perspective. We've done celebrations that they would normally have done at school, things like learning how to ride a bike or celebrating your birthday. We've done all kinds of little short prompts, like what's your favorite cereal that you'd want to be quarantined with if you only had one for the whole time?
Laura, can you talk about the response to the paper? First of all, from contributors, have lots of kids stepped up and wanted to write?
Yeah, it's been fun to see kids I've never met in person have been writing for the Quarantine Times, mm-hmm. and their parents have been thanking us for giving them something constructive and creative to do and something to look forward to as each new edition comes out. And I've heard a lot from neighbors who don't have their kids or grandkids nearby and who say, wow, thanks for showing us what kids are up to. It's so cool to see all this creative, fun energy that kids have. So I've gotten a lot of emails from people who are otherwise pretty isolated, but they've really enjoyed reading the Quarantine Times.
Now, Claire, do you feel like you miss seeing your friends at school every day?
Yes, definitely.
Does working on the paper and being able to work with other kids, some maybe you know, some maybe you don't, does it make you feel like, hey, at least in some way you are in contact with them?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, it's been fun. A lot of her friends have contributed and sent in pictures and things, right?
And poems, yeah.
And poems, yep.
And Laura, what's the age range of contributors to the quarantine time so far?
Well, my kids, I have four kids. My kids are ages 10, 8, 5, and 3. So we've kind of focused on that elementary age range, things that kids in that age range can write about. So our upcoming edition this weekend, we asked kids, introduce us to your fictional friends. We don't get to spend as much time with our real life friends, but who are some of those movie characters and book characters that you're spending a lot of time with? Kind of a twist on a book or movie review that might keep us all company if we can find that same friend.
We're talking about the Quarantine Times, a newspaper, a kid-centered newspaper based in Middleton. Laura Lundgren is with us, former English teacher and Middleton resident, and her daughter, Claire, assistant editor of the Quarantine Times. Laura, you got a lot of attention. The Washington Post highlighted the Quarantine Times in a story it did about how kid newspapers are popping up during the pandemic. What was it like to see that on the national stage?
That was so cool. That was a real treat for our kids, especially the kids who had their little article featured in that page that got presented on the Washington Post. They were excited to be able to share with their parents and grandparents. Not only am I in a local newspaper, we made it to the Washington Post. That was a cool honor.
Yeah.
Claire, what other things do you think that you would like to write or draw and get your friends to write and draw for the Quarantine Times? Do you have some more ideas you're working on?
We are going to do a nature. The next Quarantine Times, the fifth version, is going to be of nature. We are focusing on Pheasant Branch's 25th anniversary.
Yep, the Friends of Pheasant Branch is celebrating their 25th anniversary, and they are working with us to get kids outside, celebrating nature, writing poetry, yes, and finding some of the cool natural treasures that we have here in Madison area.
Well, Laura, you had this inspiration to do the paper as a former teacher yourself and a parent doing this. Do you have suggestions for parents out there looking for ways to help their kids keep engaged and keep learning, even if it's not the full-on school experience?
Yeah, we found our favorite experiences are things we can all do together. Mm-hmm. We much prefer going on a nature walk, looking for some of the neat animals, and then coming home to research those or plants that we see. Rather than being on different screens in different rooms, we really love to be doing books that we read aloud together as a family. So I think it's all about doing the things we normally do as a family, but with a little more intentionality to make sure we're going that extra step to be a little curious or explore and answer the questions that get raised as we do our normal outdoor activities and read books together.
And Laura, one of the things I love about the Quarantine Times is all the prompts you've given to kids for things to write about or draw. And that sounds like something a parent could do at home, you know, even if they're not actually making a newspaper out of it.
Absolutely. There's so many different ways to process this. I think kids don't do as well when you ask them direct questions like, how do you feel? But if you ask, man, how do you think the dog feels about having us all at home? You might get a little glimpse of how they're processing this abrupt change to their routine.
Now, Claire, you're 10. You don't have to decide on a career just yet. But does working at the Quarantine Times make you think you'd like to learn more about journalism?
Yes.
You'd probably like to be a cartoonist if you could, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Claire. I'm sorry.
In my spare time, like when we were still doing school and all that, in my spare time, I always liked doing cartoons, and now I get to do one every day.
Yeah.
Do every day.
Her idea was to do coronavirus cartoons, kind of making light of some of the new phrases like social distancing, and we're all in this together. She made some new coronavirus cartoons that'll be in our next edition.
Yes.
Laura, this is a great project for the kids now. Are you hoping it's going to be something that they and others can look back on, hopefully soon, when this is behind us, to remember this different time in our history?
Absolutely. I think this is a story kids are going to be telling for the rest of their lives. The school year that got interrupted, the quarantine, being at home for this time. And I thought the newspaper would be a great artifact of this time to help them focus on what were some of the good and fun things that we got to do during this time. What are some of the memories? I just thought it would be a great way for them to keep track of what they were thinking and feeling at this unique moment in history. And I think it gives kids a chance to write their own version of this story.
Clara, is there something like that for you, something that has been fun, even in this weird time?
Yes. We have been going outside a lot, and not just on trails. Just we can play in our own backyard for 5 hours, maybe.
Yeah. A lot more extended, long playtimes outside, right?
On the trampoline.
Yeah, trampoline, going on walks in our neighborhood. We found some new views we didn't even know were within walking distance of our house.
Yes.
In our last minute or so, Laura, if somebody's listening in another community and thinking, wow, this sounds like a great idea, do you have some advice on how they could get something like that started?
Absolutely. Or tell people you're interested in doing this through Nextdoor, Facebook, and your community. There's some great online applications. If you go to the Quarantine Times Facebook page, I just did an FAQ of all the questions I've been getting from people of the different online resources I've used to do newspaper layout and create the some of the cool prompts that we've shared.
That's great. Laura and Clara, thank you both so much for sharing this with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks.
Laura Lundgren is the editor-in-chief of the Quarantine Times, a kid-centered newspaper in Middleton. Her 10-year-old daughter was also with us, Claire, who is the assistant editor. You can check it out at flipsnack.com/thequarantinetimes, or as Laura mentioned, you can look for the Quarantine Times on Facebook. Thank you, by the way, to everyone who gave to Wisconsin Public Radio during Giving Tuesday. That was yesterday. We really do appreciate your support. Your generosity keeps people around the state connected with essential news, thought-provoking conversations, inspiring music, and more, including Central Time. If you blinked and missed it, there's still time for your gift at WPR.org. Your support now and in the past makes a big difference in people's lives. Thank you. If you're into supermoons, eclipses, meteor showers, and giant planets, the next few months are going to be a treat. We'll talk about what to look for in Wisconsin's night sky coming up. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. 2020 looks to be a pretty good year for stargazing. There's already been some noteworthy activity, including a lunar eclipse, a satellite train, and three supermoons. In fact, there's a fourth supermoon this week and a meteor shower as well. But wait, there's more. If you want to get a good look at Jupiter and Saturn, you're in luck. Plus, there's something called a great solstice eclipse that hasn't happened in 20 years and won't happen again for another 20. Lots of other cool stuff to talk about as well. Bob Bonadurer is the director of the Daniel M. Sorf Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here.
Well, before we dig into the space stuff, the museum, including the planetarium, they're closed now because of COVID-19. What kind of things are online that might help people who might otherwise be visiting?
It's Wednesday. We put out a MPM Connection newsletter with all kinds of activities and education on there. And the planetarium here is doing some cool videos. We did one on the asteroid that just missed us last week. And we hope to have some live Wisconsin stargazing things online virtually. So stay tuned.
Now, before we get to what's on the calendar, let's talk about stargazing in general. Seems like this is a fine time to start something, activity you can do maybe in your own backyard or parking lot or whatever. Why should we make an effort to look up at the night sky?
Sky is half our horizon. It's all around us. And it's just beautiful to look at. Of course, when we get a clear sky, some of the clouds can be cool too, but the planets, the stars, the moon, they're all very, very cool. And so it's all around us. And just get out there and best you can for some of the sights, get away from the streetlights. It's a great family activity, a great friend activity. But of course, keep safe, keep our social distance, and gaze at the most distant things of all, the universe.
Now, I think it's a bummer sometimes to live in a, you know, a city where you got the lights and you can't see as much of the sky. I actually saw an idea that, hey, for people who are pretty ignorant about what's up there, like me, That can actually be a good starting point. It edits out a lot of the stars. What are some things we can observe in the night sky when we don't see the whole picture in, a city area?
Well, the best thing right now is just to gaze west after sunset and see Venus. I mean, it's been glorious for the last 3-4 months. It's going to be there for only another about 3-4 weeks. So catch Venus. It's the number one thing in the sky besides the night sky, besides the moon. In fact, it's the number one reported UFO. but just look west, and it's just brilliant. Of course, Jupiter is in Saturn and Mars are all very bright in the morning sky. And, of course, tonight we got the supermoon. So check that out if it's clear.
Yeah, let's talk about that supermoon. What makes a moon a supermoon?
It's just a little bit closer. It's the moon's orbit is not a perfect circle. It's an ellipse, kind of oval-shaped. And so it brings it about 7% closer during a supermoon. It's not all that noticeable. Every full moon is spectacular, just it's beautiful in the sky. But tonight it's going to be a little closer, just a tiny bit bigger.
And people love to see this when they can on the horizon. And the moon looks gigantic sometimes. It's a supermoon and it's on the horizon.
Right.
It's kind of a trick, though, right? Just our perspective making it look super huge.
Yeah, that's the true supermoon. And it's not real. It's an optical illusion. But we just perceive it. It's an eye-brain thing going on in our head, but it just makes it cool. And, of course, the color of the moon on the horizon is spectacular. It gets that orange, pale yellow color, and that's a pretty sight.
Now, there's a meteor shower going on, but I understand because of the supermoon, our chances of spotting some shooting stars might not be so great?
Exactly. Most shooting stars, falling stars, or meteors, they're very faint, most of them, and if the moon's around, it acts like a big city light, and we can't see them. So, unfortunately, for this meteor shower, the Eta Quirids, I would not recommend going out to try to see it.
Talking to Bob Boninger, director of the Daniel M. Sorf Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. We're taking a look at Wisconsin's night sky. By the way, if you're a stargazer yourself, experienced or like me, you could join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us what you're looking at or ask questions of Bob to find out what you're looking at. 800-642-1234. Well, if we want to see some good meteor showers over the next, 5-6 months, Bob, what are our best opportunities going to be?
Oh, my favorite, the best one is the Perseids in August. And as the weather's nice and just get away, and this year the moon will be out of the way, which will be great. That's a perfect time to plan for a trip away from streetlights and just lie in a lawn chair or blanket and look up. But best time to do that is between midnight and dawn. So it pays to get up early to watch that.
And I understand this summer we've got a special feature planned, Giant Planet Week, featuring Jupiter and Saturn. What's going on?
Well, these two planets line up every 20 years or so, but this one is extra, extra special because they are going to be closer together than they have been in almost 400 years. In fact, they are going to appear as one, quote, star in the sky. And they're going to get closer all summer, and the date for them being the closest is December 21st.
And is this the thing called a pulse, if I'm saying that right? I have not witnessed this word before this conversation.
Yeah, that's it's a word for conjunction, just meaning lining up together in the sky. So, I mean, obviously they're not really close together. They're hundreds of millions of miles apart, but they're lining up, and it's just going to be a neat event.
Well, that's a 20-year event. I want to ask you, Bob, about something we're going to talk about on the show tomorrow, actually, the 30-year anniversary this year for the Hubble Space Telescope. We're going to talk about that tomorrow at 4. But, Bob, what comes to your mind when you think of what we've learned from Hubble?
With Hubble, I think of paradigm shift. I mean, it was the first space telescope to get above our murky atmosphere. And you can compare it to Galileo, right? Our whole universe, our view of the universe changed when Galileo took his telescope and turned it toward the heavens. And when we did this with Hubble in 1990, it just revolutionized our thinking. Many just amazing discoveries, and it's been going great for 30 years, and it's very appropriate to celebrate that.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Brian is with us in Dorchester. Brian, hello.
Hi. About several weeks ago, I saw a string of satellites all tracking same direction, kind of evenly spaced.
Yep.
For a few nights there, I seen it. You know what that was about?
Yeah, these are the Starlink satellites being put up by, you may have heard of Elon Musk. He's a famous entrepreneur. And they're communication satellites. They're going to speed up internet so we can talk to each other all around the world. That's why they're put up there. And they're very small, actually, but there are a lot of them. And they are eventually going to circle the globe, and we'll be able to communicate much better.
I understand. Thanks for that call. I understand, Bob, there is some controversy here among people who like to watch the skies about these things popping up and eventually circling the globe.
Sure. Yeah, it definitely is, because they you know, people who like to take photography of the night sky. But this has been going on for a long time. So it's kind of a pros and cons ever since, of course, Sputnik way back in 57. But we need to have things up in space to help, you know, to study our Earth. That's important. The Earth satellites and communication satellites, they're important. So it's a give and take. And I know Mr. Musk has darkened some of the newer satellites that are going up, so they won't be as reflective. But yeah, it is something that we have to plan carefully.
We're talking to Bob Bonador, looking at some upcoming events in the night sky. Bob's the director of the Daniel M. Soroff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. And you can join us at 800-642-1234. Have you seen anything cool while looking up at space lately? Is there anything in the weeks and months ahead that you're particularly excited to see? Any meteor showers, planets, or constellations? Do you have questions about what's going on in space or how you can see the action? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about some of the cool stuff going on in the night sky in 2020 with Bob Bonador, director of the Daniel M. Soroff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like to get out and star watch looking in from your backyard, or do you get serious about it with some kind of telescope? What are you seeing? What are you into? What are you looking for this year? Do you have questions for Bob about what's going on up there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go back to your calls now. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. I was just wondering if you had any information about anything that might be going on with the Yerkes Observatory down in Long Beach Bay, if anybody is going to be able to take that over and reopen it. It's pretty, you know, historic place.
Oh, very good. The news is good from Yerkes. It is going to reopen. They don't know quite how. They got the University of Chicago, which closed it, you know, ran it great for so many years, over 100 years. But it is going to, it's been sold to a foundation, and they are excited to reopen, but they don't know when or the exact plans or anything like that yet. But the news is good from Yerkes.
Tom, thanks a lot for the question at 800-642-1234. Bob, I understand this is a big year for eclipses, but we probably aren't going to get in on a lot of the action here in Wisconsin.
No. And the penumbral eclipses of the moon, that's when the moon goes through the Earth's shadow, but the lighter part of the shadow where there's a slight dimming. We'll see a couple of those, in fact, on the night of July 4th. And again in December, but no major eclipses this year, no solar eclipses. You'll have to travel if anyone wants to go to Chile or Argentina in December. It'll be worth it. We took a group from the museum down to Chile last July, and we just had a phenomenal time. It was just beautiful.
Now, another story going on, this is something we won't be able to see, but we can look forward maybe to images of this in the future, the launch of another NASA Mars rover. So
yes.
What's this one going to be looking for?
This one is the Mars 2020 rover Perseverance, and it's got a helicopter on it, too, or a drone, if you will, which is kind of cool. It's going to launch in mid-July and get there in February, and it's the next step, right, to investigate a little closer, and eventually we'll have a sample return mission where we'll send a spacecraft and bring back rocks from Mars, and then who knows, one day maybe people on Mars.
You know, I happened to mention earlier lunar meteorites here on Earth. So they get dislodged from the moon. We end up with them on Earth. Do we ever get ones from as far away as Mars?
Yes. And I used to have one time. Or, I mean,
wow.
On loan from the University of Minnesota. But, oh, yeah, it was so cool to hold this little rock from Mars in my hand, and I took it to a couple things we were doing. It just thrilled me to no end. That we have Martian meteorites on planet Earth, and they're in different universities and museums, but it's just a cool thing, yeah.
That is cool. Back to our callers now. Dan is on the line in northern Wisconsin. Dan, hello.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. And I was just curious, is there any, you know, we live up here in northern Wisconsin. We've got great night skies. And I was just wondering, is there any better way or a new way of predicting that we're going to be seeing the aurora borealis or the northern lights?
Oh, the northern lights. I would love to see those sometime, Bob. And it seems like it is hard to predict, right?
Yeah, very hard to predict. Well, somewhat. I mean, they happen after a big storm on the sun, big solar flare or coronal mass ejection, they're called. And these particles, these charged particles, you don't see them, but they'll hit the Earth in a day or two. So there are predictions. There's a website called spaceweather.com. You can go on and find out. But that doesn't guarantee anything. It just tells you the chances go up that there might be a aurora borealis or the northern lights. But again, with the meteor shower, if there is a chance to see the aurora, you got to get away from streetlights. And the further north you go, the better, simply because these particles from the sun, they get in at the magnetic poles, which, of course, are near the geographic poles, so you have to get north.
I've never seen them. I imagine you've found your way clear to see the northern lights, Bob.
Yes, and I'm looking all the time, but I've probably only seen them about, 8-10 times my whole life. And they're a rare event, but they are breathtaking. I mean, they're just wondrous. And someday soon the museum would like to do an aurora trip to some place like Alaska or Norway where chances are very high. Because if you live in Alaska, they happen like every other clear night. It's a common sight up there.
Now let's talk in our last couple of minutes about the seasonal constellations we can look for. The list of constellations I can recognize is the Big Dipper, and that's about it. What else can I see over the course of the summer, Bob, that even I might be able to pick out?
Well, we just lost Orion the Hunter. He's one of the most familiar constellations. Easy to see, lots of bright stars. But his nemesis is coming, and that's the Scorpion, Scorpius. And you'll start to see that low in the southern sky. You can see it in the morning sky now, but you'll see it in the evening sky after sunset in about another month or so. But Scorpius is a fun one to see in the night sky. And if you look high overhead, it's not necessarily a constellation, but the summer triangle, three bright stars, Vega, Deneb, and Altair. And you can see those three straight above you, even in the city.
And getting back to where we started, you mentioned Venus is in view these days, and we can spot Venus even with a bright supermoon going on.
Oh, Venus, you can see Venus during the daytime. If you know where to look, it's not easy, but at night, it's the brightest thing. It's just gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
Anything, as we wrap up, Bob, anything on the longer-term horizon you're looking forward to?
Well, the planets, the outer planets of Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn are visible in the morning sky, and they're going to move into the evening sky. As we talked about, Jupiter and Saturn and Mars will, in October, be very bright in the sky. We'll have a blue moon on Halloween night. That's kind of cool. But kind of long-term, looking for the next big total solar eclipse crossing America on April 8th, 2024. That is going to be a splendid sight.
We'll put that on our calendars. Bob, thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem, Rob. Thanks for having me.
That's Bob Bonadurer, director of the Daniel M. Soroff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. We talked to him today about some of the highlights taking place in the night sky over the weeks and months ahead. You can check out the museum's sky and space calendar for 2020, by the way. We've got a link up at wpr.org/centraltime. The closure of Wisconsin schools through the end of the year means kids are at home with parents who still go into work or are working from home or not working at all. The usual daycare, playdate, or family babysitting options are off the table. Parents say that's been challenging, to put it mildly. Madeline Fox has more.
Lots of parents are feeling the pressure of having to fill in as teachers for their kids with none of the training. But even for parents who are teachers, it's a heavy lift. Beth Fogarty is a second grade teacher in Hudson. She has three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7.
We have tried daily schedules. I've brought home giant chart paper to keep us on a schedule of this is when mommy needs to be working and this is what your expectations are. But I'm tired. It's hard.
Both Fogarty and her husband are working from home. She's trying to manage her class of 25 remote learning second graders and wrangle the kids. And her husband works for IBM in his home office. She sent this recording of them catching up over dinner.
How was it in the backyard today?
Good. Back skin, yeah.
What did you do?
We played.
Despite her grand intentions of daily schedules, things don't tend to go quite as planned.
There's lots of snacks and lots of breaks, and it's a lot of, like, walking around, I feel like. Sometimes I feel just like I'm spinning, like in circles.
That's been the case for a lot of parents.
In a typical school day, children aren't necessarily just sitting at a desk getting lessons and doing work for 7 hours straight.
Jenny Hofschulte works with Parents for Public Schools in Milwaukee. So she's been talking to parents around the school district.
They leave for lunch, they go to gym, they do, you know, and so that the school day doesn't look like sit in your desk all day at the kitchen table doing a bunch of things.
Hofschulte has a fourth grader and a 19-year-old who was working with AmeriCorps until he got recalled. Now the whole family is working from home. Hofschulte and her fourth grader have been getting learning done where they can. She shared a recording of them browsing new exercises online.
Yeah. Can you pick something that helps you with your reading or your writing today, too?
I'll read.
What are you going to read?
Big Nate.
Big Nate? Okay.
For her and her kids, what's hard is less school and more everything else. Like trying to explain a disease that's got even experts confused to her fourth grade son.
Every time I'd ask him to take something outside, he would hold his breath. And finally, I was like, okay, we have to talk about that because, like, you're not going to catch it going to the recycling bin.
Many parents don't have the capacity to help kids with schoolwork during the day. Anna Mullen has two kids at Leopold Elementary in Madison, ages 7 and 8. Both have difficulty learning even in a traditional classroom. They're both on specialized education plans. Her son is on the autism spectrum.
Reading is a huge problem for him. And if he has it in his mind that he can't do something, he won't do it. So this whole online learning is pretty close to impossible for him.
Mullen works 30 hours a week as an in-home caregiver, so she's out of the house during what would be the usual school day. Her partner works an IT job from home, so he can keep an eye on the kids, but he can't really help with lessons.
And then I come home and it's like, well, you know, this teacher wanted to have a Zoom meeting and, you know, they want me to update them and how things are going. And it's like, I haven't even been able to log into some of the programs.
She says there is a silver lining. Busy classrooms were overstimulating for her son in a way being at home isn't.
He has gone from saying rude words, hitting people, refusing to help with household chores in any way, to like hardly any meltdowns.
Most school districts have switched to pass-fail grading or at least giving families the option to choose if they want letter grades or pass-fail. But schools know a lot of students will come back in the fall, if they are back in the classroom, with worse than the usual summer knowledge slide. Parents, meanwhile, are looking at a lot of kid management, since summer schools and camps are looking increasingly unlikely. Madeline Fox, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we kick off our interviews with the two candidates in this month's special election for Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District in Central and Northern Wisconsin. We'll meet the author of the new book, The Hilarious World of Depression, who shares moving but sometimes funny stories from celebrities who have been dealing with depression. And it's the 30th anniversary of the Hubble Space Telescope. An astronomer tells us how Hubble opened our eyes for a new look at the universe. By the way, you could still join in our earlier conversation about the night sky. Let us know what you're looking for. And hey, maybe share pictures if you have some good night sky pictures. You can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 6, pandemics can have a big impact on women. Kate and her guests look at the influenza epidemic of a century ago and today's pandemic and the many ways they have affected women, politically and personally. That's tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then it can be tough to get motivated during the coronavirus pandemic. A guest shares some advice on finding purpose amid all the bad news. One hint, take it one day at a time. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.